Recently, I've seen the aftermath of fornication, and the destruction it has left behind moves me to deal with the sin. I'm not saying that there never has been the sin of fornication here at Eastside, but if there was, it was before I came, before I knew anything about it. So I'm not preaching this sermon this morning to deal with the past. I am preaching this lesson this morning to save us trouble in the future. Fornication is not just for those disposed to be wicked. I think this is the first misconception we need to get cleared away from our minds in order to deal with the subject. Most people perhaps think that only the wicked and the depraved ever commit fornication. While we are not at all minimizing the terrible sin that fornication is, or its destructive power, while we're not minimizing that at all, yet it is a really bad mistake for someone to say, why, only people who want to be wicked and depraved ever do anything like that. That's simply not so. And the example of David shows this. Of course, some people have the view that because David did it, because he did commit fornication, then that shows that he was wicked and depraved all along. Well, that's not the picture of David we find in the Bible. When David was first chosen by God, God announced to Samuel that I have chosen a man after my own heart. Because David was such a faithful servant of God, in 2 Samuel 7 and 1 Chronicles 17, God said to him, I will set your son upon your throne, and I will establish his kingdom forever, and he shall reign forever. Around half the Psalms are written by David. The Messiah, according to that promise we referred to in 2 Samuel 7, the Messiah is regarded as the son of David. So David was not a wicked man. He was not a depraved man, but he was a man who fell into a trap of his own making. In other words, nobody set the trap for David, but he fell into one anyhow. In several cases that I have known of, nobody started out to commit fornication in the situation, but it happened. And it happened with ordinary people who were basically good people, just like we have here, ordinary people, good people. Some of the finest people that I've ever known, and I've known of cases where some of the finest people I've ever known committed fornication. If you think that it just simply could not happen to you, then remember the words of 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 12. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. It is that time that we get so confident that nothing can happen to me, while I'm beyond the reach of sin. I'm beyond the reach of the devil. We get overconfident and we're not careful. And before we know it, we are caught in a terrible trap. So remember that statement. Take heed lest ye fall. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Now, I want us to look at the sin of fornication itself. Fornication is a sin against one's own body. In a few minutes, we're going to be studying a little bit more extensively from 1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, but we're not going to look at that verse first of all. But it is in that passage that Paul talks about fornication being a sin against one's own body. I think that of all the statements in the New Testament, that statement right there sets forth the heinous nature of fornication, perhaps better than any other. Fornication was a very prevalent sin in New Testament days, and it is a prevalent sin today. In New Testament days, it was a prevalent sin not only because privately people committed fornication, promiscuously. But it was also a problem because ritual fornication was a common act of worship, both in Old Testament days and in New Testament days. Ritual fornication, meaning fornication done as a religious act, as weird and as strange as that seems to us today. It was extremely common in Old Testament days and in New Testament days. You have perhaps heard of the Temple of Aphrodite in Corinth, of which it was said there were 1,000 priests and priestesses, and they were there for nothing else than to commit ritual fornication with those who came to worship Aphrodite. So you can see why fornication would have been such a tremendous problem then. But it is a tremendous problem today also. You know, you hear people talking about AIDS. Well, homosexual sexual acts come under the term fornication. You hear people talking about other sexually transmitted diseases today. You hear people today talking about unwed mothers and illegitimate children. Isn't it interesting the way our society talks about fornication? Isn't it interesting the way our society talks about the sin of fornication without realizing that AIDS, more heterosexually transmitted diseases that have been with us even longer, illegitimate children, unwed mothers, all of those things stem from fornication. Fornication. It is a prevalent sin today. In other words, I'm saying that so that you can realize that every time you read a comment about AIDS, every time you read a comment about the number of unwed mothers, the number of illegitimate children, and anything like that, you are reading a statistic about fornication. Now then, look with me at some verses, and I have the verses pretty well written out. You can turn if you like. But I have written them because I don't intend to spend long on them, and I have quite a few I want us to look at. First one, Matthew 15, 19. Jesus said, "For out of the heart come forth evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, and fornications." He says, out of the heart comes forth these things. It is important for us to realize that the Bible does not make a distinction between a sin that I can do with the body, which has nothing to do with my mind or my soul, and on the other hand, sins that do involve my soul and my mind. Though fornication is a sin of the body, do you see where Jesus says it comes from? It comes out of the heart. In the book of Revelation in chapter 2, there were those who were teaching some of the doctrines of the Gnostics that came to be such a problem in the early church. And there were different forks of Gnostic doctrine. One of the forks was that whatever you do with your body is only physical and does not affect your soul whatever. That you can do most anything you want. Look in Revelation 2:15. "But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there some that hold the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit fornication." So there were some who were there at this church in Pergamum who were encouraging people to commit fornication. Likewise, in the church at Thyatira, verse 20, "But I have this against thee, that thou sufferest the woman Jezebel, who calleth herself a prophetess, and she teacheth and seduceth my servants to commit fornication and to eat things sacrificed to idols." She seduces, meaning that whoever this woman was, she was offering arguments to encourage people to do things that were wrong. And one of the Gnostic ideas was that you could commit fornication because that was purely a physical thing that didn't involve the mind. Well, I want you to see Matthew 15, 19 just blows that right out of the water. Out of the heart come forth evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications. Acts 15:29. This is in the chapter where the so-called Jerusalem conference was held, and when it was held, decrees were sent out, and there were only a very few of these decrees that were mentioned. A few commandments. That ye abstain from things sacrificed to idols, and from blood, that is the eating of blood, and from things strangled, which was still the eating of blood, since something strangled would not have been bled properly when it was slaughtered, and would thus involve a breaking of the commandment not to eat blood, and from fornication. So of the things mentioned, abstain from things sacrificed to idols, from blood, from things strangled, and from fornication. These were the decrees that were going to be sent out to the Gentile Christians. Gentiles, what did they need to be reminded of particularly? Well, they had been idolaters, almost all of them. Therefore, they needed to be reminded, be careful not to worship idols. They were heavily involved in fornication. Don't commit fornication. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the Apostle Paul lists a number of things in that passage that were sins, such as murmuring and idolatry and things like that. And he refers to the Old Testament, to those who did these things in the Old Testament. And so as he goes down, he says, so let us not do this as they did. So he gets to verse 8, neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. This was the fornication in connection with Balaam. Remember the story of Balaam who came to curse the children of Israel, and he couldn't curse them, so he taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before Israel. The fornication that was committed by Israel in that day was probably ritual fornication. But it was nevertheless fornication. And there fell in one day 23,000. Paul says in Galatians 5:19, now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these. Fornication. That's the first one. Ephesians 5:3. But fornication and all uncleanness. Listen to the strength of this. Let it not even be named among you as becometh saints. Now that doesn't mean don't talk about it. Because Paul is talking about it. Paul is not going to tell us don't do this and then do it himself. So it doesn't mean don't talk about it. But it means keep it out from among you so you don't have to talk about it as being something that's going on among you. That's the point. Now, we don't want fornication going on among us as something we have to talk about. It is a dreadful thing when a church has sin in its midst and has to deal with sin in its midst. And that's true of fornication. Keep it out from among you. Let it not even be named among you as becometh saints. And then Paul wrote Colossians 3:5. Put to death, therefore, your members which are upon the earth, fornication, and lists some other things. To the Thessalonians, Paul wrote, for this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that you abstain from fornication. So we've looked at a number of verses, and by no means have we looked at all of them. But now let's turn to the main one that I want to study with you about fornication, and that's 1 Corinthians 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, context begins in verse 12. And we're going to mainly just start in verse 13, but the paragraph begins in verse 12. And the point that is being made in this section is fornication is a sin against one's own body. And to really make that full, to properly sum up what's in that paragraph, we ought to say, fornication is a sin against one's own body and therefore defiles the temple of God. Because in this context, he makes the point that our body, the body of the Christian, is to be a temple of God, a temple in which the Holy Spirit dwells. Now, I've broken this down as I often do when I'm talking to you about a passage and trying to set forth the points made in that passage. So I have it broken down verse by verse as we go through here, and that'll make it easy for you to follow along with me. He begins by making this statement in verse 13. Meats for the belly and the belly for meats, but God shall bring to naught both it and them. So consider that statement. Meats for the belly and the belly for meats, but neither is of enduring value. It is obvious that meat was made to be eaten by man, and that the belly of man or the stomach of man was made to digest the meat. That is an arrangement that was made by God and has the approval of God. But neither the stomach that digests the physical food that we eat now, nor the meat that we eat, neither one is of any enduring value. Beyond this life, we will not have any need for meat or for stomachs to digest physical food. Okay? See? That's a very clear point. We understand that. These are aspects of our flesh that will pass away. But the relationship between the stomach and meats is one that was ordained of God. On the other hand, the last part of the verse, the body was not designed by God for fornication. Now, one might think that it was so, but no. And you will understand more clearly what he's talking about as we go along. In fornication, the body itself is used as a tool for evil. Consider, this expression, the body is not for fornication, but for the Lord. Now understand that this does not mean that the body is not designed for sexual activity. He's not saying that. God obviously did design it for such. But the sexual activity God designed the body for is to occur within marriage, not fornication. All right? Let that digest for a moment. Fornication is sexual activity that occurs outside the marriage relationship. And as such, it does not have the sanction of God. Now that's the thing about fornication. The body is not made for fornication. It was not designed for fornication. Because fornication is sexual activity that does not have the sanction of God. Sexual activity within marriage falls under the sanction and approval of divine law, and thus is not a violation of the purpose of the body itself. Because all of that comes under the plan of God and has the approval and the sanction of God. It is the design of God, the purpose of God, but not fornication. Now in verse 14, the body itself, which is the residence of the soul and of the personality, will be raised. Now, that's the relationship between verse 13 and verse 14. In the relationship of meats to the belly and the belly to meats, this is a relationship that will only survive in this life. After this life, there will not be meats, there will not be a stomach to digest physical food anymore. But this body of ours will be raised. Now it will be changed and it will be glorified, but this body of ours will be raised. And so the body that I've got, I'm going to have this body, but it will be a glorified, it will be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. It will be raised incorruptible. And so that's the point that he's making in verse 14. The body itself, the residence of the soul and of the personality will be raised. Is it appropriate then to take that which will be raised from the dead and use it as an instrument for evil, that is now, to take this body we have now and use it as an instrument of evil, contrary to the design and the purpose and the sanction of God, when this very body that we have is the one that will be raised, changed, glorified, incorruptible? Our bodies are, as it were, organs of Christ's body, members of His body. Look in verse 15. Know ye not that your bodies are members of Christ? Now, We read sometimes, like in 1 Corinthians 12, where it talks about the church as having different members of the body, like the arms and the legs and so on like that. Well, so members here, it does mean the various parts of the body. So our bodies are, as it were, parts of Christ's body, like we are organs of His body, that we are joined to Him spiritually. All right, now then, our bodies are, as it were, organs of Christ's body. But sexual activity joins one to another. Shall we become organs of a harlot? We who are supposed to be joined to Christ, shall we be joined to a harlot in a way that will defile the relationship we have with Jesus and which will defile our own bodies? We have a spiritual relationship with Jesus. We become one spirit with Him. Verse 17. Let's read verses 15 through 17. Know ye not that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take away the members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? God forbid. Or know ye not that he that is joined to a harlot is one body? For the twain saith, he shall become one flesh. Genesis 2:24. But he that is joined unto the Lord is one spirit. Now the wonder, the joy, the glory, the beauty of it all is that I can be one spirit with Christ. I can be joined with Christ in one spirit. And if I enjoy all the things God has provided in this life, as God has provided it, as God has ordained it and approved of it, I won't do without anything. I'll have all the blessings that God has provided for the human being. But I have to remember, I have a spiritual relationship with Jesus. And if I misuse my body, I break that spiritual relationship I have with Jesus, and I defile the very body that God has given me for my body, a body which He intends to raise, to change, to be a glorified body. And therefore, verse 18, flee fornication. I want to tell all of you, do not negotiate about fornication. You make sure you have that fixed in your mind as the immediate response. Your immediate response when faced with fornication, do not negotiate. Flee. Get out. If you, and in fact, one thing I'm going to do in the last part of our lesson today is I want to help to make you aware of some of the situations that enable fornication to slip up on you before you know it's coming sometimes. Be aware of it, and when you are aware of it, that there is a danger of it, flee. Remember how Joseph did not stay to discuss the matter with Potiphar's wife. He tore out of her grasp, even though he had to leave his robe in her hands to do it, his tunic. Your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. So when you're going about doing whatever you do, when we go about doing whatever we do, let's remember who's in us, who is with us. Whatever you do with your body must have the sanction of God, because He dwells in us. Now then, things that lead to fornication. As I talk to you about these things, some of the points come from the study of the Bible, the stories of in the Bible involving sexual sin, such as David and Bathsheba, Amnon and Tamar, the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife, even though it was one-sided there, Potiphar's wife, and of course in Amnon and Tamar, that was one-sided also. But some of the points come from that, but a lot of these points come from the practical experience I've had as I've dealt with other people and found what caused them to be involved in these situations. And I really do love the people we've got here. And I love our young families. Fornication is not confined just to the young. But I think it is probably statistically more prevalent. And I don't want anything like that to happen here. I'd be happy if I never again got a call. Can you come over? I'd be happy if I never had to do that again. So I want to talk about things that lead to fornication, and I hope that this will help. One is the wrong kind of friendships. Men and women are made so that it's really nice for a man and his wife to be the very best of friends. That's great. But if you're a man and you begin to have just the very best friends with some ladies, you better be careful. Now, I think it's good, and I'm not condemning the idea of being friends, for men to be friends with women, to have friends among women. But if you begin to just have these real, real dear, close, intimate friends among women, you better be careful. I think that men need to cultivate those really close, intimate relationships, that kind of friends, with other men. If you begin to cultivate that kind of friendship with a woman, maybe the wife of your dear friend, be careful. You better be careful. Again and again, I have seen problems come up. Be careful. Friendships are wonderful, but couples need to be careful that they do not let their friendship become something else. What happens sometimes if you're not careful is that through that friendship you begin to build an affection. And as you build an affection, you also begin to focus on what you find attractive about that other person. And if you're not careful, that kind of friendship can turn into something else before you really realize that it has. Be careful about your activities together, that they do not put you in a position of temptation. I have heard people argue that, oh, it's okay for us to go mixed swimming, you know, all the bathing suits and all that kind of thing, because our families are so close together. Do you really understand what you're saying, if you're saying that? Here you have formed an affection. Say you're a man and you and your wife are real close to this other couple, real close. And you, the man, have grown to be very fond of your counterpart, the man, but you're also very fond of his wife. You really like her personality, really like her. And you know that you're attracted by her. And then you go mix swimming together and say, oh, that'll be all right because we're so close. No, you're lighting a match to see if there's any gas in the tank. That's what you're doing. That is one of the most dangerous situations. And so that's what I'm telling you. Do not do that. Be careful about your activities together that they do not put you in a position of temptation. Here's one that seems kind of funny to have to talk about, but it is. Be careful about the wrong kind of sympathy. I have known of situations where I'm convinced that way back, what eventually did lead to the fornication was the wrong kind of sympathy. And I've known some people that got involved in fornication to be people with very big hearts, to really have deep emotions and deep feelings for people who were having a problem. But you can have the wrong kind of sympathy. For example, say a woman gets together with a very dear man, friend of hers, and as they, you know, it's no harm, they're just going to meet together and have a cup of coffee or something like that, except what they talk about is, she begins to talk about problems she's had, and he probes, well, what kind of problems? What? Maybe he imagines that she and her husband have had some problems together. And so she begins to talk and tell about some problems that she and her husband are having. Oh, how easy it is for him as he tries to comfort her to tell about some problems that he and his wife are having. And before you know it, they can begin to build up a feeling that, well, hey, this is interesting. You and I both have similar problems. I really understand. Oh, to have somebody that understands, that's a potent thing. The sharing of intimate thoughts with someone that you shouldn't be sharing them with is danger. Now, I'm saying this because I've seen what happens over and over again when you're not careful about this kind of thing. Being alone together to share those thoughts is a dangerous situation. Be careful. Be careful. It is possible to have friendships and maintain friendships and be wholesome and thoughtful in everything you do. And I would not encourage, and don't mean to encourage, a lack of sympathy, a lack of friendship, a lack of feeling and affection. I'm not trying to do away with that. But those things can lead you into situations where you can find yourself thinking of other things and being led to do other things. And there is a failure to realize that lust is a monster that can spring up and devour you in a moment. How quickly it can happen. It can happen so quickly that you didn't even think about it happening that morning. And before the morning was over, it had happened. Believe me, as I tell you about these things, I'm telling you, I think in my mind, yeah, I remember that time that so-and-so committed fornication. Or, yeah, I remember when so-and-so. I could illustrate every one of these with specific stories and specific names. This is the way it happens. Be careful. Lust is a monster in camouflage. You don't see it. You don't see that it's lurking right out there in the shadows sometimes. And when it does leap, it'll have you before you know it. Be careful about desire. Be careful about lust. Do not exercise desire for anyone else than you have the right to desire. Do not let yourself do that. Now here's something else. Another situation that I have encountered. Now this is going to deal more with parents. Here are parents that have children that they are rearing. I want you to avoid some mistakes. I have seen problems, fornication, arise from a failure to teach modesty and modest behavior. Modesty is getting to be more and more of a problem all along. Shorts have become almost universally accepted. I don't have to tell you that years ago, Christians didn't wear shorts. Now we get into shorts and then we have to decide, are these long enough? Or are these short, too short? Are they too tight? Are they too big? Are they long enough? How long do they have to be? One way to avoid all of those questions is don't wear shorts. Well, our standards have fallen. One of the problems, girls are not taught how to wear dresses anymore. They're not taught how to dress properly when you do wear a dress. In these meetings that I've held, I have seen flagrant examples of women who are only used to wearing pants. And I'm not condemning pants, but they're only used to wearing pants. They put on a dress and they don't realize that if you don't have on the proper garments, when you walk out the front door of a building with the sun shining, you might as well be in an X-ray machine. Mothers, you better teach your children about that. Teach your girls that if they wear a dress modestly. Not a miniskirt. And not a transparent one. You've got to remember those things. If you don't, then the day is going to come, very likely, when you're going to be torn to pieces by the horrible experience of fornication. a feeling, it can't happen to me. A failure to realize how quickly fornication can happen. Placing oneself in situations to be tempted, swimming together, dancing, wearing immodest clothes, bodily contact of other kinds that you have to be careful about. Athletics, when you're playing athletics, you've got to be careful about the bodily contact. As a young woman begins to, or let's say a girl begins to grow into a woman, begins to have the appearance of a woman and everything, I have seen fornication come because the young woman did not realize the power she has to provoke lust. And then I have known some young women who learned they did have the power to provoke lust and then did not realize what can sometimes happen when you provoke it. And I'm not at all saying that when rape occurs, it's the woman's fault. I'm not saying that. But I know of a case now and then where it did play a very big part. Teach your daughters to behave themselves modestly, to realize the power they have, to provoke desire. Young men, we parents need to teach our sons to control their desires. And even though they may blame it on the girl and say, well, she ought not to dress immodestly, unfortunately, we can't control the way everybody dresses out here. We need to teach our sons they have the responsibility to control their thoughts even when they're dealing with people that are not modestly dressed. And we need to encourage our sons to stay away as much as possible from places where you're going to see immodestly dressed people. Christians do not have any business on the beach in June. They don't have any business on the beach during the spring break. When they know it's going to be covered up with young men and women cruising looking for action, that's what they're there for. Drinking and flaunting themselves. No Christian has any business being there. And when he is there, or when she is there, they're playing again with a match to see if there's any gas in the tank. Parents, it's important to realize that children grow up. It is important, you must realize that children do grow up. And those little bitty, cute little boys and girls, they will grow up. And those boys will become young men with desire, and the girls will grow up likewise. They will have desires, and they will be sexually attractive to one another. And if that's not handled in the right way, then it can bring about disaster. I knew of a situation, or I have known of a situation within the last couple of weeks, where one of the problems was the mother simply could not understand how anybody could look at her daughter as the object of sexual interest. She just could not imagine such a thing. But any man would have realized that, well, of course she could. The girl was a very beautiful girl, but her mother did not realize she's grown up. Realize your boys and girls are going to grow up and prepare them to conduct themselves honorably, whether they're a boy or a girl. Now, the closing part of the lesson, very quickly, the cost of fornication. Put this away and remember it. After you commit fornication, you will not be the same person that you were. You sold out. You sold yourself and you sold your integrity. You won't be the same person you were. You can pick up the pieces and go on with your life, but it's like a vase that is smashed and you put it back together with glue. It's not the same vase that it was. And if you have done this, and this has happened to you in your life, I want to encourage you to go ahead and try to do the best you can. And you can live a life pleasing to God. David did. And you can put your life together. But I believe that if this has happened to you, you would recommend to anybody, don't do it. Avoid the problem in the first place. Don't have the heartache of finding out what fornication is all about after the fact. If you are married and you commit fornication, you will have changed your relationship forever. Oh, you may go on. You may go on as husband and wife. You may have a good marriage. I've known of situations where that happened many times, really. But it's different. Trust is a sacred thing. Sin can be forgiven, but trust has to be earned. And if you ever betray your mate, and they say, I forgive you, they can forgive you, but you just get yourself set. It's going to take you some time to earn the trust that you did have. That trust in a marriage is one of the most precious things you can have. You will have betrayed a trust. You will have betrayed a trust, a commitment that you made, a covenant that you made with your partner. You will have betrayed your spouse. And I'm thankful to God that I don't know this from my experience, my own personal experience. I'm thankful to God for that. But that hasn't been an accident. It's been on purpose that it hasn't happened. But I have sure been with others. I've seen the look on a wife's face or on a husband's face when they realize my partner has been unfaithful to me. You will have betrayed your spouse and you will have betrayed your children. How do you face a child? How do you tell them about it? How does daddy tell the son or the daughter what mama did? How does mama tell son or daughter what daddy did? Or how does mama tell what mama did? How does daddy tell those little children looking up at him what he did? Don't put yourself in the position where you ever have to do that. You will have betrayed your parents and your brothers and sisters in Christ. You will have destroyed your self-respect and it'll be hard for you ever to get it back. You will have sinned against God, as Joseph said in the long ago, how can I do this and sin against God? David felt the joy of his salvation gone, and he asked the Lord to restore it. Fornication seems to be such a simple sin, and a sin filled with pleasure, but it is a dreadful trap. It is a million times better to avoid the experience than to put things together after it happens. So my lesson today has been designed to be preventive. Preventive. I say again to those of you who have at some time in your life perhaps been involved in the sin of fornication. I haven't preached this lesson today to try to make you feel bad. I really do sympathize with people who get caught in that sin and then have to deal with it. I really do feel for them, and I feel for you. But nevertheless, I have to tell people and warn them, because don't you agree, if you've ever been involved in anything like that, don't you agree that it would be far better if we could have this lesson today and help everyone here avoid that sin and avoid that disaster in their lives? Though that'd be far better. It may be that you're not a child of God today. One of the wonderful things about becoming a child of God is that when we obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, our sins are forgiven, every one of them, wiped out. We start over with a new slate. If you're not a child of God today, why don't you become one? Have those sins of the past forgiven. Become a child of God and live and walk with God throughout life. It may be that you're a child of God, but you have turned away. You've been unfaithful. We plead with you to come back to the Lord and live faithfully, walk by His ways, and be faithful to Him. Repent of your sins and pray for forgiveness. We stand ready to assist you and to work with you any way we can to help you in the problem that you have. But if it is your will, your desire to respond to the invitation extended by Jesus, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.